I think that there is a little bit of AP that like often just kind of ruffle the feathers of purists. And I don't think the brand's afraid to do that occasionally. They're in, not in any way that would threaten their core, of course. But I think with something like this, they're kind of saying like, hey, we say what the Royal Oak is.
Hey everybody, I'm your host Stephen Pulverin, and this is Hodinkee Radio. Over the last week, both Audemars Piguet and Omega have dropped their 2021 collections, or at least the starts of those collections, and we have a lot of thoughts on the matter. So I grabbed John and James, and we're going to talk about what these collections tell us about the brands overall, as well as all of our nitty-gritty thoughts on the specifics of each of the individual models. We've got new Seamasters, we've got new Offshores, there's a ton to cover. So without further ado, let's do this.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good.
How's it going, guys?
Good. It's things are heating up, aren't they? Watches and wonders on the horizon. And what we're here to discuss this week is we got both AP and Omega dropped their 2021 releases in a span of like, what, 3 or 4 days, something like that. I mean, just to me, like the top line with AP is that this year feels like they've taken stuff they do well and they've just refined it. Like they've taken all the hits and just made them a little bit better rather than trying to introduce some like new crazy over the top thing, right? Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I would agree. It seems, you know, they made this big play for green dials in kind of across the core Royal Oak range. And then we've got an update to the Royal Oak Offshore Diver, which I think is I want to see it in person to compare to what I know of the previous generation, but it is more of an evolution. I mean, it's the same size. It's a new movement, but that's something that like, I don't know for time and date. Does that matter to a lot of people? It's always good to have the current movement. That makes sense. Right. But I'm sure the previous movement in the other Royal Oak Offshore Diver was also pretty lovely.
Yeah, I would agree. It feels very much like refinement. You have, a slightly different case size in the offshore chronograph, and then you have the kind of neat quick strap system, which I don't think any of us have had a chance to go hands on with it, but it looks pretty amazing.
Yeah, I do think the strap change thing is kind of an interesting. That's become kind of a thing in certain classes of luxury sport watches. Vacheron mm-hmm. does it, and you even have seen more and more brands switch to those little quick release bars.
Yeah,
the bars that have the little tab, and I don't really care for those systems because depending on the shape of your wrist, sometimes you can see the little tabs through the lug gap when the watch is on your wrist, which doesn't feel luxurious. It's kind of like seeing part of the interior of a car that's meant to be covered by a piece of leather or whatever. But I do really like the idea that not only, and I like that it comes with more than one strap. I mean, you buy a $25,000 dive watch, and I think there were probably people who bought the original and then had to wait a year or two for other strap options to start to show up or get them custom made, because it is a non-standard way of kind of attaching the strap to the case the way that the Royal Oaks do it. So I think this is super smart. It also means that they get to shore up people spending another, I don't know, what do you think a leather strap from AP costs?
I don't even want to know.
With the hardware, a few $1,000s, I would assume, right?
Yeah, probably.
And then I'd because I don't think the hardware is necessarily swappable. They didn't say that. Like it's not a pin buckle. It's going to be some sort of a folding clasp and the rest of it. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I like that the watch, they went with three kind of less than or more than just black dial versions. They have a gray dial, kind of a navy grayish blue dial, and then this khaki adventure one. And I think they look really good. And I just dig that, you get it and you'd have two straps right away, which is something I always liked about the overseas collection, where if you buy the one with the bracelet, you get the leather and the rubber as well. So you're kind of done to a certain extent anyways.
Yeah. And I mean, while we're on the offshore divers, right? Like, those to me were one of the standouts because they also got redesigned, right? Like, it's not just like they added this strap system. They didn't change the case size, which I'm a little surprised by. I kind of would have expected maybe them to go to like 41 maybe, but the big changes is, in addition to the new colors, we got a new dial design, right? Like the dial, the tapisserie pattern is slightly different. The markers are slightly different. What did you guys make of these changes?
I think it's like, I'm not, I, it depends on how deep you're into tracking these sorts of things. I think that a casual person, even an AP fan, might not notice. For me, I think that the swap from the full brand signature, you know, that says Audemars Piguet to just a gold AP, that's very Royal Oak, right? That's like a bit of a nod back to the jumbo in some ways. And then the mega tapisserie, I think is just kind of what you've come to expect from the offshore. You know, it's kind of a bigger, more bold feel. And I think the new markers look great. I really like the original. I've picked it in drafts before and that sort of thing. It's one of my favorite luxury watches and one I'd love to own. But I do think that the way that they've massaged the markers and such was smart. I think it's it looks a little bit more refined. It looks a little bit more now. Sometimes it's just that, like, you know, like with cars, they'll do a mid-cycle refresh where they change the headlights and the bumper a little bit. And sometimes that's all you need to be like, oh, well, I mean, this doesn't feel old. There's nothing wrong with the old one, but now there's a new one. So I think that makes sense, especially with what next year represents for the brand, the 50th anniversary of the Royal Oak. So I think this year is I don't want to call it a holding pattern because they launched a bunch of stuff. But nothing like revolutionary. Exciting to see another 15202 in platinum. And weird to see a 15202 without a tapisserie dial.
Yeah, I mean, before we move on to that watch, because I definitely want to talk about that watch, I think it's interesting that you like the refinements on the dial, the reduction to the AP, the mega tapisserie, this sort of like shorter, wider markers. I agree with you that it feels more now. I'm not sure I like it better. I think I might like the old dial. It feels a little more refined. This almost feels like you like took the old dial and like drew it and then made that. Like it's like one step like artistically removed from the old version.
Right.
I don't know. I'd be curious to see them side by side because my feeling with AP generally is that like their press images are good. Sure, they're as good as anybody else's, but I don't think they do the watches justice. Generally, I think the finishing, the faceting on everything, the color treatments, like you really have to see them in person. So I don't know. My gut is that I think I like the old version better, but I'm going to withhold final judgment till I can do like a little side-by-side one in each hand situation.
Yeah, I think for me, it still goes to one of the colorful boutique editions. Is still where I would land. Probably the orange, the yellow is really killer. But I, you know, the original with the black dial is kind of perfect. So that's also fine. But I mean, you can't always just keep making the same like people expect at a certain point. And I definitely don't think they messed it up. And you know, in the presentation we got, they had a bunch of points about little tiny like sub millimeter changes they've made to the case shape and some of the architecture. And it'd be really interesting. Someday, who knows when, especially for me up in Canada, but like when you, if you could get a chance to see both next to each other and actually take in the differences, because I think that's where a lot of what we have is just on a screen and you kind of have to operate from that with the scenario these days. But my guess is hands on, they're probably super similar and one is just going to feel, maybe a little more refined. I think they've changed some of the case curvature, so it might sit a little better. Might also just depend on your wrist.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think you can go wrong. And any Royal Oak offshore diver is pretty sick.
Fair. Let's go to the watch that you mentioned a moment ago. We'll come back to the offshore in a minute to talk about the chronographs, but I want to talk about all the chronographs together because they kind of share something important in the new movement. But platinum jumbo green non-tapisserie dial. John, maybe you want to start us off there. Like, what are you thinking about this watch? It's a pretty weird Royal Oak.
I mean, I thought it's really cool. I think anytime like a limited 15202 drops, in platinum, everyone is going to be like, whoa. I mean, I think it is the standout watch in my mind of everything that AP dropped out or dropped so far this year. You know, having said that though, and I think this is something you alluded to earlier, the absence of the tapisserie is a little bit, maybe, I don't want to say offsetting, but it's in a 15-202, just maybe a little bit jarring. I think about it compared to other, you know, recent 15-202s. I think the green is cool, but there was something about the, you know, to kind of quote James, the salmon adjacent color of the dial from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the BC.
And white gold that somehow, I don't know, that resonated with me a little bit more than this one. But I still think it's Agreed. Like a super cool watch that obviously there's going to be tremendous interest in.
Yeah, I think it's gorgeous. It wouldn't be my first pick. I would want the tapisserie dial. Probably, I mean, if we're really saying first pick, it'd be gold. But I do like, I do think it looks really good. And I think that there is a little bit of AP that like often just kind of like, well, this is pretty, but it will also kind of ruffle the feathers of purists.
Yeah.
And I don't think the brand's afraid to do that occasionally. They're not in any way that would threaten their core, of course. But right. I think with something like this, they're kind of saying like, hey, we say what the Royal Oak is. And in the history
point.
Of the Royal Oak, there are a lot of weird dials, like a lot. You know, if you're bored, open up another browser tab and just look up the Tuscan dials for the QPs.
Yeah.
Really yeah. weird, like bright pinks, reds, MOPs, you know, weird glassy sort of like almost like that platinum Rolex Daytona from 2017 or whatever.
A
lot of different versions. And some of them, you have to remember, like AP operates differently now than they did in the 80s or 90s. If you had money, they'd make you any dial, especially if you're talking about a QP, because you're going to have to wait for it most likely. Mm-hmm. So there's not, I think we'll learn a lot about how much weird AP stuff is actually out there from before the years where they were doing press releases like this in auctions in the next 20 years or so, when we see stuff and people go, I think that's fake. And they're like, nope, it's real. Here's all the paperwork. We just, it's one of one. We had the extra 30 grand or whatever to you know, commission a dial color or whatever it is. So
yeah,
I think the green's cool though.
Yeah, I think the green's cool. I think for me, you know, similarly to how John, you know, prefers the BC, I think for me, it's the titanium and platinum with the gradient blue dial from, I guess, what, 2018? Two-tone, cool. All white metal. That really amazing sunburst. It's actually like a very similar sunburst effect, just this does have the tapisserie. But like, I agree with you. I think this shows that, like, okay, anyone who thinks that the AP Royal Oak hype is like reached its zenith, AP is like, nah, like get out of here. Get out of here with that. You know, we're going to drop a limited edition non-tapisserie platinum Royal Oak with a bright green dial, and it's going to cost $105,000, and you're going to be begging to buy one.
For me, this kind of, in my world, like, because I understand when purists see something that is different, I think the concern isn't so much about this watch, it's the concern that AP will stop making them with the tapisserie dial, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when people see a carbon Doxa, they go, but does that mean I can't buy a steel one in a couple years? Is this like a new direction? And I think it's not a new direction. It's just a little spur. Like it's look at this.
Agreed.
Hey, cool. This that way.
Yeah.
I think that the core path is unchanged.
I agree. And I mean, you alluded to it. This is part of a collection of five watches that all have green dials. Funnily enough, this is the only one that's not a tapisserie dial.
It's strange, right? Very intentional.
Very intentional, very weird. But the others are, it's three flying tourbillons, one in titanium with a green tapisserie dial, one in rose gold or pink gold with a green tapisserie dial. And then there's one in titanium with an emerald set bezel and green dial. So like those three, we can kind of like, I think, set aside. The other one that I think most people listening will be interested in is the Royal Oak chronograph in yellow with the green dial, which it's cool looking. I don't know about you guys. I saw it and my immediate thought was Rolex.
Yeah.
It has a Rolex feel for sure. The green on gold.
Yeah. That's very reminiscent of a certain Daytona for sure.
And even just like, even not just that Daytona, John, to your point, I think that Rolex just owns green.
Yeah.
Not officially in any way, but just like in your brain a little bit. The green box, the green leather, the green this, and yeah.
Green and yellow gold feels, and I don't know. I mean, maybe it's intentional, you know, maybe it's the team at AP kind of like poking fun at it or putting their own little spin on it. Maybe it's just a nice combination. Like, I do think it's just aesthetically pleasing. It looks good, but I couldn't help, like, when I looked at it, be like, am I looking at the right PDF here? I mean, that gets us to our next collection here, which is actually, I think we can talk about them side by side. There's four new Royal Oak chronograph models, all in pink gold, blue dial and brown dial, strap and bracelet. So it's four variations on the same watch. And then there's five new offshore chronograph models, and all of them use the new AP in-house movement, the one based on the movement developed for the Code 1159 chronograph. And this, to me, I mean, James, as you talk about like subverting enthusiast expectations, this is the thing everybody's wanted for years and years and years and years and years. And like, I'm not an offshore chronograph guy, but like as a watch enthusiast, I am happy to finally see these watches have like fully integrated in-house chronograph movements in them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there's not, like with this one, there's not a lot more to say. If you know what a Royal Oak offshore chrono looks like, you're already 95% of the way there. The movement is definitely the story here. And then, of course, we're looking at like modernized colorways. So we're seeing the green and the darker metal. We're seeing the brighter blues, that sort of thing. I think aesthetically, if it's a Royal Oak offshore, I mean, they're very, very cool things. They're a little bit too modern for maybe my taste. But of course, I say that right alongside absolutely adoring the diver. It could just be the chronograph sort of scenario. They're a little bit on the bigger side at 44, but I do think that they look how they have to look. They still look like a Royal Oak offshore, but unlike the diver, which we covered previously, these are more of a departure from the established aesthetic. They feel super modern, definitely like a luxurious sort of overbuilt. Lot of tech, a lot of various, you know, sort of finishing and contrasts and materials and that sort of thing. I think they look killer. And if you're kind of like a Royal Oak offshore guy, you know, I think the divers kind of sit to the side of what the offshore has been for a long time. And I think if you've got the wrist for them, they're pretty sweet. And the new movement's not going to hurt at all. That's a pretty sweet thing.
They definitely do have that like supercar quality, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a complicated sort of balance of textures and tech and color and font, and it definitely has like a sporty modern feel.
Yeah, I mean, I think in 2021, you know, it totally makes sense for AP to have its chronographs, you know, be in-house. Nothing at all against the FPGA, though. I mean, that's obviously one of the best. It's been used by so many high-end brands, and it's like a, you know, one of the great automatic chronographs there is.
Yeah, cool. Well, I mean, I think this gives us a pretty good handle on AP. Like I said, there's a couple other things. We'll have coverage of everything across the site. But yeah, there's some diamond set Royal Oaks. There's some new Code 1159 pieces with ceramic. But I think the Royal Oak chronograph and offshore stuff is really the stars, or are really the stars this year. Cool. Well, let's move on to Omega, because I want to make sure we give Omega plenty of time as well. I think in a funny way, like Omega strategy and AP strategy don't seem that divergent. You know, it's refining and reshaping existing models rather than going crazy. And granted, with Omega, we got like brand new moon watches a couple weeks ago, so I don't want to get too greedy there. But yeah, how would you guys kind of describe the broad strokes of what we got from Omega earlier this week?
Yeah, it feels like a lineup kind of adjustment, like kind of filling in a few blanks. I think it's been a little while since they gave a strong kind of rethinking to the 300. That naming I find very annoying because they have other watches called the 300, right? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the vintage inspired 300 straight lugs, the deep dial, the sandwich effect dial, you know, the not the 300 Pro or the 300M or the SM300. Like they've made it difficult with it from a naming convention, but this is more that classic vintage throwback rather than your, well, I mean, one of the three that we could be talking about is the other. which is the professional side, which, you know, but I think from the two that they kind of broke out with this, I think they look really good. I think they're smart refinements. The thing I really want to see, because I'm very picky when it comes to this specific line of watches, is I've always found the dial depth on these watches to be kind of deep. So the delta, think the dial is kind of lower in the case than you expect. So there's always a big shadow from the edge of the case. And it's something I only noticed because I always have to take pictures of these, and they would rank among the most difficult watches I've ever photographed. Yeah. Because it's so difficult to light that dial and not blow out all the other details because the dial is so deep. And I don't know if in refining, because I believe these are a little bit thinner, so maybe some of the architecture, you know, supporting those sizes have been massaged. I'm not really sure. That was always my kind of impression of it. Otherwise, I mean, like a really beautiful watch. And I guess now we're getting the lollipop hand, which we only saw on the 007 edition from five years ago, at this point, the last Bond movie, I believe. I think they look good. I mean, they've always been good looking watches. The reference material was a great looking watches. So that makes sense. What do you think, John?
Yeah. I mean, in general, I would agree with with Steven's original sentiment that it feels like a year of refinement also for Omega. Important not to forget that they've already done some big things, you know, in the last couple of years, and then earlier this year where they took the Moonwatch and they made a radical change to the Moonwatch, which is something that I think in the last year or two, we all kind of saw as inevitable. But if you go back a little bit further back, I mean, that's something that I never would have predicted seeing happen, taking the 1861, a movement that had been certified by NASA, and replacing it. Like, why bother would have been kind of my thought. And so I think So in doing that, which is, you know, part of this year's release, it's already made, 2021 a big year for them, you know, and it also kind of in a symbolic way too. It's like Omega is no longer just, I feel like you can't really talk about Omega without like METIS certification and the coaxial now. I feel like those kind of are synonymous with Omega at this point. Whereas when the Moonwatch was still hanging on to like a kind of like an older style of movement, I don't think you really could say that given how important the Moonwatch is. So, yeah. Mm.
What do you guys think of this? The bronze gold. It's a very brown watch.
It's a very brown watch. It's not my favorite of the collection, but I actually think it's probably going to be one of the more successful if I had a guess.
Yeah. I think if they put the dial from the titanium one, the blue dial with that bronze gold, I think that I'm really not a brown guy when it comes to tropic dials or root beers or the rest of it. So it doesn't speak to me, but I can see the potential with some blue on that bronze gold, which I think could be interesting. I think the sizing is still really strong at 41. Like they're sticking to what they know. We don't have a price for this bronze gold one, so I'm not really sure where it will land. I did a post 2 years ago at this point, the last year where we had a reality where I was in New York. We did a post with the three precious metal 300s.
Oh yeah.
And so I've experienced all of those. I do wonder where this lands in terms of pricing compared to the solid gold, or platinum or white gold and whatnot. Pink gold. We'll see. It's a very, like I said, I'm just struck by how very brown it is.
Yeah, I agree. I think you touched on the fact that there's still 41 millimeters. And I think that's an important thing about this watch. Like one of the things that I learned from this release, right, assuming they started at square one, is that Omega doesn't think of this watch in the same way that, say, like Tudor thinks of the Black Bay 58. You know, like this is not a vintage reissue. This is not a watch for vintage collectors to buy. This is a modern watch in modern scale. It just happens to be inspired by and have some of the design traits of vintage pieces. And I think that's an interesting positioning. I think it's much more consumer friendly for the most part. And I think it tells us that like Omega thinks of these as consumer watches. Like these are watches they want to sell a lot of, and that they want to be sort of a flagship alongside things like the Speedmaster or the Seamaster Diver 300. And I think that's a not insignificant statement from them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much I necessarily buy all of that because it's so willfully a vintage effect. You know, you look at the new one. If we pull away from the bronze gold one and look at the new 300s, is we have a blue one with very much tan sort of loom. I think it's gorgeous, but I don't think that you could say that they're not in some way trading on the heritage of that design. Because it's not, this is, you know, they've made a lot of decisions here that are not about making a strictly modern watch, and which I think is highlighted by look at the other 300 Pro that they released. That, on the other hand, feels like very much a watch that is not talking necessarily about its past or Omega's past, maybe just the, just the past of the wave dial, skeleton hand, 2538, stuff like that. I think it's up to them how they want to position it, but it's also kind of up to the market to decide its context. And this is a vintage inspired watch regardless.
Yeah. And we'll touch, I want to get to the Diver 300 black in a minute, which like we can also talk about that name, but one thing I don't want to get away from is the Seamaster 300, the new iteration, introduced a sandwich dial to the mix, which we didn't have on the earlier versions. Similarly to my thought with AP and doing a green on gold chronograph feeling very Rolex, like, how do you release a dive watch with a 12.369 sandwich dial and not expect people to think about Panerai? Or do you expect that and not care?
And then, hey, like, I would just add to that, like, you know, Panerai also has, they were also one of the first brands to do bronze watches, actually, if you think about it.
True.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's talk about the other side of Seamaster that we got this week, which is the watch, James, you mentioned before, the Seamaster Diver 300. Because of course there have to be two Seamaster 300.
Yeah, 300M versus 300, I guess, is what we're doing now.
Yeah. And this is the black, which is exactly, I mean, it does what it says on the tin, right? Like, it's a Seamaster Diver 300 where every component is black. This obviously draws on some, like, you know, more recent heritage, if we can call it heritage. You know, Omega's been doing these black ceramic dial divers for a couple of years now. They've been doing the Dark Side of the Moon watches. This kind of like material experimentation has been a big part of Omega, I would say, over the last, let's say, 10 years, you know, 7 years, something like that. But this is sort of like this idea taken to its like full logical conclusion. What do you guys think of it? Like, just give me your honest first impressions. Like, what do you think about this watch?
I think it's cool. I think it's like if Omega made like a streetwear drop, like if this was like a sneaker drop of watches, this is by Omega, this is what it would look like. I think that's kind of, it's definitely not a watch that, you know, not that I am a diver. I think, you know, James is, maybe we can get his views on this, but it doesn't seem like the kind of tool that I would want to have to rely on, or that I would want to necessarily, it wouldn't be the first dive watch that I'd reach for to go like on a 14 day trip diving in, like, you know, in Mexico or something. But it's like super cool. You know, I was thinking about this earlier, like, if out of all the Omegas, like the one that I kind of like, I want to own would be like, you know, the watch we were just talking about, you know? But if there was like one watch that I could grab and like bring to a meetup and show people like, look how cool this is, it would probably be the black.
You know, the idea of the kind of shadow diver or shadow dial watch has been around for a long time. There was kind of a trend 10, 15 years ago in the micro watch industry where everybody was making phantom dials that had, you know, black luminous plots that would barely glow, but it was kind of like a thing. It was like a little 2-year trend or whatever. And for this, like, I don't get it really. They make another version of a similar watch at this 43.5 millimeter, which is kind of in titanium. And it's kind of like a tech version of the watch. And I think it, to John's point, would be a little bit more useful diving. Obviously, the legibility on this isn't the point of the design. I'm not going to bash them for it. It's very, the look is super intentional. And I really adore that bezel, that whatever sort of frosted finish they've put on the bezel.
Yeah,
and
if you go to this bezel's amazing.
Yeah, if you go to the post and check out the like the big macro image, where you can see the waves on the dial are kind of created using, I think this is how they do it with all of them, but it's very pronounced in matte black, where the kind of alternation of the waves is polished sandpaper, and that's how you get the effect. And it's such the brief does nothing for me, but the way they executed it is remarkable. They did a great job pulling it off.
Yeah, James, I'm with you on this. Like, this is a watch that the concept does nothing for me. And in fact, like, I find the concept slightly annoying. You know, the idea of like, oh, let's take a dive watch, which is like at its core a functional object, and make it look awesome but function like arguably poorly. However, they just knocked it out of the park. Like they turned lead into gold here.
And I think John's perspective on comparing it to kind of being a special drop in a streetwear community, like a shoe or something, I think that's the right way of looking at it. I think this is again meant for Omega heads, people who are very much into this and probably already own a Seamaster or a 3 and a Speedy. And then they see this and they go like, all right, well, this could be my big, bold kind of summer watch. Bright sunlight, who cares? You're going to be able to see the dial just fine. You know, you can see in the images that it's not that there's no contrast, there's just no color. You can still see the difference between the hands and the markers and the dial. It might take you a split second longer to read it, but that's not a legitimate issue. It would be weird to dive with for sure. But you're also diving with a dive computer. You would only use the watch for fun or if your computer failed, in which case I'm sure this would be just fine. I still have the biggest issue is they just don't need the HEV. We don't have to get into that because
that's a whole other podcast, James.
But that bugs me more than the full Phantom treatment.
Okay, well the last thing I want to call it specifically is actually not a watch. It's a collection of straps, which are these Moonwatch Velcro straps for the Speedy with the NASA logos on them. They're like a little heavily branded for my taste, but they're cool. And like NASA swag is never a thing I'm going to argue with. And I think a lot of Speedmaster customers are going to want these. So like, they're cool. It's cool to see NASA get on board. It's cool to see Omega like do something like this, you know, to talk to the enthusiast community, which is, I think, something, and again, this is probably a whole other show, but it's something Omega's like kicked ass at over the last couple of years, over the last decade plus probably. Is keeping enthusiasts excited, and just seems like the latest in that.
It seems like I don't have a Moonwatch, but it seems like the kind of thing where if I did have a Moonwatch, as long as it's a reasonable price, I could see myself definitely wanting to have one of these.
For me, it's a little bit like the wearing the jacket with all the like logos on it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a time and a place for that. Like if you're at the racetrack or if you're doing space stuff or whatever, it makes more sense to me. But then the other thing is like, there's like a pretty long history of people wanting to have the astronaut strap for their Speedy. I mean, if you guys don't know, Carl runs Gas Bones out of the UK. Like that was largely his bread and butter for years, was he made an exact replica. Like, I mean, exact, he has an exact replica of the strap that you would use on the outside of your spacesuit. And then you could get it sized to actually wear on your wrist, but it had the little patch with the numbers and the rest of it. I'm not as big a space nerd. I don't know if some of that's tied to, you know, NASA's an American thing and the rest of it. I follow along and I certainly find it interesting and in the period fascinating. These days, you know, it feels like we're making a lot of references to something that we don't do anymore collectively as humans. You know, space travel. But I think the straps certainly look cool. And like, if it fits the general kind of aesthetic that you operate in, like if you paired it up with a nice MA1, you know, like the bomber jacket and leaned in just a bit, but not enough where like you're also wearing the NASA t-shirt, you know, you just have to find that balance. I think they look good. Omega, like their straps are super high quality. They make a great NATO if you're willing to spend that kind of money on a NATO. So they're not going to mess around. And there's probably a world in which this is something of a collector item where people are buying them and not wearing them.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, guys. I mean, AP, Omega, we got Watches and Wonders coming up. We're in the thick of it.
Yeah, buckle up.
Buckle up. Thanks for doing this, guys. And I'm sure the three of us will be back talking about another collection of new watches very, very soon.
Cool. A pleasure.
Thanks, guys.